Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always by Barnabas Piper. And Pipe, we have another little special episode in the works today. So it is a bonus, man. And I told you off the air, I shared that this will be the best thing that happens to me today. So which is both a reflection of the fact that I love talking about the NFL draft, but also just the fact that it's a Monday and it's shaping up to be that kind of a day for me. So this is a little reprieve, man. So I'm stoked to hear your thoughts as a Viking fan on the draft, and I'm of course always stoked to talk about the NFL draft. So excited to get into that. But I wanted to tease something real quick, man. Listeners may or may not know, I wrote and co-produced a feature-length film. It's actually a football film we shot in the old Pontiac Silverdome, which used to be the home of the Detroit Lions, the Michigan Panthers, and the USFL. The Detroit Pistons played there for a little while back in the Bad Boys era. And we shot a movie there. We shot there for 10 days last fall. And now we've launched a little Kickstarter campaign just to raise the rest of our post-production money. So making a movie is a long and expensive process. And in order to do this thing right and in order to make the picture look as great as it can possibly be, we are raising some more money. And we actually have some great premiums, some stuff that we pulled out of the dome, lots of original Lion stuff, seat backs, pieces of the roof, like ticket stubs, all kinds of stuff that we were able to reclaim from the dome and offer to people on
Kickstarter. Is that a fancy word for steal? Like, is this a black market thing?
No, dude, here's how it worked. It was really cool. So the dome is actually slated for demolition. It's going to come down sometime this summer. And while we were in there, the guy who owned it, the guy who leased it to us to use as a movie set, was basically like, "You guys own it for the next 10 days, so like whatever's not nailed down, whatever you want, you can take out of here." So we actually found some amazing stuff. I wish I'd had more time, like when we weren't working on the film itself. I wish I could have just scavenged around in there, but I found like old like contracts from the USFL and old paperwork.
Wow.
And I've got an old film. I found the last kind of remaining Lions game film that was in there that hadn't already been scavenged.
You're not giving that away for the Kickstarter.
Dude, definitely not giving that away. I got some turf that I'm not giving away. I snagged a seat back or two for myself. But yeah, we have lots of great stuff, man. And it's exciting. I mean, this will make you right away the coolest and most interesting person at whatever cocktail party you're at, just to say you're involved. So and we actually have,
we'll
have stuff
we'll
from
the link in the show notes so listeners can find it real easily. All right. Or I'm sure you can search it on Kickstarter, but we'll just drop it in the show notes to make it real easy to find.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And if you do wander over to Kickstarter, it's Silverdome Film. So you can look us up that way on Kickstarter. But yeah, we've got categories as low as $1 and as high as $10,000. If somebody wants an associate producer credit. So yeah, man, it's fun. We're excited to kick this thing off, and hopefully the money will be in hand soon and we can just finish up the movie.
Is an associate producer credit kind of like getting your name on a building at a college? Like, it's just you earn that by donating?
It totally is. Yeah, it totally is. And the levels are different. So I think 10 grand would maybe get somebody executive producer. I would have to look, but yeah, those are basically like naming rights to a building at a college. And again, a pretty cool thing. I mean, your name would be on there next to Cliff Kingsbury, the head coach at Texas Tech, was one of our big contributors early on. He's our biggest investor in the film. Brett Hartman, who punted for the Houston Texans in the NFL, is involved. We've got a guy who played for the White Sox, who was a former first-round pick of the White Sox. So it's a pretty illustrious cast and crew of producers there. So it'd be fun to have your name on the movie.
Well, if I come up with 10 grand in the next few weeks, I'll strongly consider it.
Dude, there you go. You know, you can start saving for your kid's college, or you can throw it at, a very safe investment in the world of investing. I'm sure your broker, your financial guy would echo that sentiment. You know, film investing is just rock solid.
Yeah. Entertainment investments are always just a firm bet to pay off. They pay out year over year. It's amazing.
You know, they really are. They really, really are. It's just a safe bet. And Pipe, speaking of safe bets, There are going to be 32 NFL teams on Thursday night looking for safe bets of their own. And I love the NFL draft. I may actually, at this stage of my life, I might love it more than, I definitely love it more than the Super Bowl. I may love it more than, you know, a lot of the games themselves. I just think it's perfect televised drama. There are so many storylines. It's that kind of optimistic moment that every team is allowed to have, where you you dream about your roster and you dream about all the moves that your team could make to make you competitive. So I'm stoked out of my mind about the draft. As always, there are some logistical things just in family and in life to work around to be able to fully enjoy it. But I have to ask you this before we really get into the nuts and bolts of the players themselves. Whose televised feed do you watch? Like, are you an ESPN guy? Do you like their crew? Do you like NFL Network? What are you watching on draft night?
I like the NFL Network's crew better for analysis, but they just don't do entertainment quite as well. You know, in terms of the highlights and things like that. But the ESPN talking heads they wear on me after a while.
Yeah. So now, who wears on you the most?
You know what? Oh, let's see. I'm trying to remember. Is Berman still involved in this one? Because he used to be the host for it, and he was the worst. I couldn't stand him. Well, I mean, just in general, but...
I really couldn't agree more, man. It's fascinating that you bring that up, because I'm not a Chris Berman guy. There are certain people who swear by Chris Berman. I'm not one of them. He aggravates me as well. But I'll tell you, a guy that I love is Jon Gruden. Where are you at on Jon Gruden, man? Are you a fan?
The more he gets into talking the nuts and bolts of football, the more I like him. When he's trying to do the more entertainment side of things, I'm less enthused. But like when he does his what does he call it? Like his quarterback camp or those film sessions leading up to the draft, where he sits down and has those guys. You know, if this is the defensive look, how would you respond if you get this blitz? And it really shows some stuff about those quarterbacks in terms of their ability to read and react and understand defenses. And he very clearly knows and loves the game. And I love that he's really passionate about it. He's not just sort of Berman is faux enthusiasm, I feel like. It's theatrics. I feel like Gruden just sort of, if he didn't have to sleep because he was human, he would just think football all the time and just love it.
Dude, I totally agree. Totally agree. So Pipe, the way I thought that we would cover this is I just want to go down the line position by position. And I want to talk about guys we like in each position group. So this, for me, isn't necessarily the first-ranked guy in each position group, but they're just players that I like, players that I think represent great value. Maybe we can talk about players in each position group that scare us a little bit. But if you're up for it, I'd like to run through that. And then I'd like to do just a little mock draft, maybe the first 10 picks of the draft. We can alternate back and forth. You can get us kicked off with the Browns, and then I'll take it from there, and we'll alternate back and forth and just mock the first 10 picks of the draft. And mock in all the senses of the words mock, but not in the typical sense that we get into on the show, man. I have to tell you, I will probably be more earnest today about the NFL draft than I ever am on this program. And that's going to be kind of a soft spot. We did, man. I'm a big softie for the NFL draft, and people are going to see that, man. They're going to see that side of me come out. So, Pipe, let's start with quarterbacks. You know, this is the glamour position. Every year we've talked about how the industry, the media kind of overhypes these guys, and there will be guys that are overdrafted. Give me the name of a guy at that position that you really like, regardless of where you have him ranked, just a player that you like.
Man, I don't like any of these quarterbacks. I think Deshaun Watson has the potential to be the best if he's put in the right situation. But even he is, I mean, there's no safe bets in this group. It's a really bad quarterback class. And what's going to happen is that these guys get pushed into the middle of the first round because quarterback's such an important position, but they're going to end up being, you know, the Christian Ponders of the world. Because teams are going to draft for need instead of looking at their true talent. I feel like, I mean, you think about like Teddy Bridgewater was, I think, the 30th overall pick. The Vikings traded back into the first round to get him a few years ago. Right. He's better than all these guys by a fair margin, as a quarterback prospect. And he's only been a middling quarterback, you know, prior to hurting himself. So I don't know. I think Watson is the one if I was going to be forced to pick one, but I'm not excited about any of these guys.
If you had to hitch your wagon to a guy, it would be Watson. I'm going to throw you a crazy name, man. And this is a guy who I think you remove the injuries and you remove the off-the-field stuff. And he's basically Patrick Mahomes, except that he's not getting any of the love that Pat Mahomes is getting. It's Chad Kelly from Ole Miss. I met Chad Kelly when he was a senior in high school. I was doing a book with his uncle, Jim Kelly, from the Buffalo Bills. I was in Buffalo at the same time that Jim was doing his quarterback camp, and Chad was there as a camper. Freakishly talented kid, very big, very strong, very athletic. The thing about Chad Kelly to me is Ole Miss was in games because of him. No stage is ever too big for this
kid. He beat Alabama at least once, maybe twice, which
absolutely
no other SEC quarterback has done.
Dude, that's right.
It's crazy.
He's knocked off Alabama, and he's been ice in those games. I mean, just ice water in his veins. He's the kind of kid you want on your team. And adults might not like him. Media people might not like him. Coaches might not like him. But as a player, you love him. And you love having a guy like that in your huddle who's willing to do anything and do whatever it takes. I think he's got a good arm. I think he's got above average athletic ability. This is a guy, though, that can probably be had in the sixth or seventh round or even as an undrafted free agent. And I think you talk about guys, you know, like Patrick.
Off the field issues? Was it DUI stuff? It wasn't.
Dude,
it was substance
weird,
abuse related. It wasn't like domestic violence stuff, right?
It wasn't. So he had a weird kind of immaturity moment at Clemson where he got into an on the field fight basically with a coach during spring ball, and he was tossed. He was tossed off the team. He went to community college in Mississippi, the one that was in that Netflix documentary, which is a crazy thing to watch if you haven't watched it. I forget the name of it, but it was just like sad and astonishing in all the right ways. But anyway, Kelly played there for a year. Then he went to Ole Miss and was very successful. You know, had a good run at Ole Miss. And then the injury bug started to hit here through the draft process. But he had another off-the-field thing that I think he got into a bar fight, and he was kind of defending. Don't quote me on this. I could be wrong. But I think he was defending a friend or a family member or whatever. So, I mean, it was one of those defensible things that you look at and you go, again, it doesn't look great on paper. It doesn't look great from a PR standpoint. But do I want this guy, you know, to have my back in a dark alley? And do I want him in the huddle when I'm playing Alabama or when I'm playing, you know, the Oakland Raiders next year? I think he's a guy that I would roll the dice on in day three of the draft. And I think he represents great value right there, especially in an environment where somebody's going to roll the dice on Pat Mahomes in day one of the draft. And it's going to be a similar risk. You know, you're taking a gunslinger from a goofy college offense and reshaping him, which is exactly what you would have to do with Chad Kelly.
Yeah. I think his injuries are more of an issue than the off the field stuff. And the fact that I think he's already 23 or 24. So that obviously pushes him down the draft board. But yeah, he's the kind of guy who, like, I don't know, the Saints are going to draft in the fifth or sixth round. Yep. And in 2 years, he'll replace Drew Brees. And everybody's going to go, where'd this guy come from?
That's right. It'll be fascinating to see where he goes. And let me be clear. I hate spread quarterbacks. I don't like drafting kids out of spread systems. But to me, the further you get into the draft, the better value he represents. And
it becomes a no-risk situation, because if it doesn't work out, I mean, how many fifth-round, sixth-round picks? You know,
that's right.
Those are they're non-guaranteed money, and if it hits, it's a huge value. Look at Russell Wilson, he was the reason that the Seahawks built the dynasty they did, because they got to pay him nothing because he was a third round pick.
Absolutely, man, huge value, especially again in an environment where teams tie up so much cap space in the quarterback position. It could be a great bargain. Let's move to running back, Pike. Give me a name of a guy at the running back position that you like.
This is a risky one because this is purely talent, but I also want to rip the lid off this can of worms, and it's Mixon from Oklahoma.
Oh man! Oh my goodness!
Because just pure value as a football player. I mean, I think Leonard Fournette and Dalvin Cook and maybe Kamara from Tennessee mm-hmm. and a handful of the, and then McCaffrey are all going to go by the middle of the second round.
Sure.
And I think he's as good as all those guys.
Absolutely.
But because of his really significant off-field issues, I bet he goes late second round at the earliest, maybe third or fourth.
Interesting, man. Interesting. I think he's
a monster.
He is. Yeah, he ran in the 4.4s at 230 pounds. The guy's prototype. You know, he's even more of a three down guy than Leonard Fournette. You know, talk about Leonard Fournette maybe being a little bit of a liability on third down. Mixon is a guy who's done it on third down. He's a guy who was a significant part of the passing game at Oklahoma. Freakishly talented guy. I think where you have him slotted is the right place, but I also think somebody is going to take a flyer on him way earlier than we think.
And it would be hard to blame him. You look at especially a team like the Browns, who have 74 picks this year.
That's
give
right.
Give or take.
Yeah.
If they draft him and he doesn't work out, they cut him and they still have a load of young talent. But if he hits, all of a sudden they have a playmaker who's way better than anybody on their roster.
And that's right.
I've listened to all these draft shows and read these articles, and everybody has to put a disclaimer on him that of course his actions are indefensible.
Right.
And that's true.
Right.
But that was all settled in court as of this past week.
Yeah.
Like it's behind him legally, and there haven't been any additional issues since that one. Now, that doesn't defend anything, and I realize in our society, we have very long memories about certain actions, especially when there's video. But I think he deserves a chance.
Yeah.
I think the punishment for him will be additional scrutiny, a lot of criticism, and probably an unguaranteed contract, which is not an insignificant thing. But I think he's going to be better than Dalvin Cook. I think Dalvin Cook is an overrated running back.
I do too.
I think he'll be better than Christian McCaffrey, although I think he's a unique talent and he'll be good. But
yep.
I think he and Kamara are the two best running back values in the draft because I think they'll be second round, possibly third in Mixon's case. And then and I think they're just really explosive players.
Agreed, man. I'm going to give you another value guy, a running back who I love. I just like this guy's dimensions. I like that he runs angry. I love that he came out of a pro-style system at Pittsburgh. I'm talking about James Conner, man. James Conner's about 6'2", 230. Big dude, can carry the load in terms of wear and tear. This is a guy that I absolutely love, man. And I love that he's not been in the shotgun. He's not been playing little guy football, lateral football for the past 3 years. He's been playing big boy downhill, smash mouth football in Pittsburgh's offense. And I think this is a guy who is going to come in regardless of where he gets drafted. He's going to run for a lot of yards as a rookie. He can do things out of the backfield in the passing game. I'm a big James Conner guy. The other guy that I like, we mentioned his school, Joe Mixon's backfield mate, Samaje Perine. I'm a big back guy. I like big running backs, and Perine was explosive at times for Oklahoma. A little bit more one-dimensional than Mixon, obviously. Kind of a poor man's Leonard Fournette, but I think again in the right system, in a zone run type of scheme, I think Samaje Perine does a nice job.
Yeah, and the crazy thing was that they were both like five-star recruits, and they were both sort of top running back recruits in the country. He and Mixon both. When they went into college. And so that was a pretty loaded team.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So loaded. So loaded. Let's talk about tight ends. Interesting tight end group this year. The tight end group is getting a lot of hype. There are some guys that I like, some guys that I don't like because of scheme. I'm going to give you the name of the guy that I like the best. And I think he will be had in the second round. And he represents value because he had a little bit of an injury, in his bowl game. And that's Jake Butt from Michigan. Jake Butt is one of the few true tight ends in this class in that he can line up on the line of scrimmage. He can play with his hand in the dirt. He gives you value in the run game as a blocker. Kind of your classic old school do it all tight end. And the thing that I loved the most about him was that he was a big part of the passing game. When Michigan threw the ball, they often looked to him first. So even more than an O.J. Howard, O.J. Howard's getting a lot of hype. O.J. Howard will go in the top 10. I think he's a reach in the top 10. I just don't like I don't like him there. I like him kind of in the back half of the first round rather than the front half. But I love Jake Butt in the second round. I think he's a huge value, and he's going to be a great kind of polished Greg Olsen type of player for somebody.
Yeah. I feel like at worst case scenario, he's like a Heath Miller type, who's, you know, 10 or 12 years, you know, great red zone threat, maybe not a dynamic athlete, but a super valuable contributor on an offense.
Right. Catching 35, 40 balls a year, keeping the chains moving. Absolutely. I mean, any team would take a Heath Miller for sure.
When he can block, unlike some of these other guys. Like you look at what's the guy's name? Evan, is it Mathis?
Evan Ingram from Ole Miss.
And then O.J. Howard. Like those guys are just big wide receivers.
They're kind of yoked up wide receivers. David Njoku from Miami, very explosive guy, man. Interesting, intriguing guy, but you know, these are not kids who have had their hand in the ground, you know, really being a factor in the run game as they'll need to be on the next level.
At the same time, if you look at how somebody like the way the Saints used Jimmy Graham a few years ago, and some of these other teams have sort of Reed from the Redskins,
yep.
Teams have really figured out how to use tight ends who can't block, you know, because they're the slot matchup nightmare, because they toast linebackers, and your slot corner is a 5'10", 190-pound guy who just can't hang with them.
Right.
And so it's just mismatch. It's a mismatch thing.
If you put a nickel corner on him, you check to a run, and then you're in good shape, you know?
I agree. Throw to him, and they've got a guy who's just sort of buzzing around him like a fly, and can't stop him.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Weak offensive line year this year.
Yeah.
Pipe. But let's talk about our favorite offensive lineman. Do you have one in this draft?
The names are so just sort of meh that there's not a ton. There's I'm forgetting his name now. He's a guard from Pittsburgh who he blocked for Connor. And I'm totally blanking on his name right now. But he's somebody who I'm intrigued by, in part because as a Vikings fan, the Vikings desperately need interior line help. And and they don't have a first-round pick. So that second to fourth-round guard interior line draft is sort of their sweet spot. And I hope they come away with one, if not two guys.
Right.
But he was instrumental in Connor being consistently really good. And, again, it's a pro-style offense, which means he's not doing a lot of the, you know, starting with the hands on the knees, pass protection, you know, first step backwards blocking that a lot of these guys do. But he's got a lot more nasty. And so I'm going to find his name. I'm blanking on it now, but he's the one guy who I've looked at and been like, ooh, I hope they can get him.
Interesting. Yeah. I love kids. I love linemen that come out of pro style schemes. And, my guy for offensive line is in a similar place, Ryan Ramczyk out of Wisconsin. He's an offensive tackle, actually played at one of the small Division III schools, in Wisconsin, and then transferred, to the big school, had a ton of success this year. Again, is one of those guys that you feel comfortable grabbing because, of the scheme he played in, you know, he was doing
and
a lot
Wisconsin,
of the same
Wisconsin offensive linemen are always solid.
They are. Yeah.
Even if they're overdrafted, so you draft a left tackle and he doesn't quite play, just move him into guard. And all of a sudden you've got a top tier guard, because they learn how to be disciplined and block nasty, and they don't play soft football at Wisconsin.
Man, it's amazing. Having coached, so over the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, I've coached at every level from like, you know, peewee all the way up through, you know, Division II college ball, you know, where I'm coaching now. And so many kids have never gotten in a 3-point stance. You know, so many kids just live in that 2-point stance as offensive linemen. Their first steps are always backward or lateral. And, you know, then we wonder why there's a dearth of quality run blocking at the pro level. And that's why, you know, the kids literally don't know how to do it because they've never done it before.
Dorian Johnson was the guard I was trying to think of. He's the Pittsburgh guard. So he's the one who has the potential to be sort of a good value in that third round-ish range.
Nice. Nice. If it sounded like I got up and walked across my office, it's because I did. I had to kill a huge spider on my wall, man. Yeah, it was gross.
I thought maybe you were just getting in a 3-point stance out of nostalgia.
I was, yeah, just for nostalgia's sake. Let's hop to a pretty good linebacker class, Pipe. What do you see at linebacker on the other side of the ball? You guys just had Chad Greenway retire, didn't he, after a nice long career as a Viking?
He played like 12 years and was a really good player. The NFL has thrown me off when it comes to linebackers because the outside pass rushing linebacker is sort of in vogue.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you spend most of your time on the other side of the line of scrimmage, you're not really a linebacker. You're a pass rusher. I feel like it's a different position. So it seems to me real clear that Reuben Foster is the best linebacking prospect in this draft, kind of bar none, in terms of your classic sideline to sideline run stopper, but also, you know, can play downfield. I mean, he's a little like Luke Kuechly, who is just filthy.
Yeah, he's filthy. Reuben Foster's got a little bit of like dirt bag in him. Like, he'll strike you. He'll hit you in the face.
He just thrives on big bending guys' face masks, which is so fun.
He's so much fun to watch, man. Yeah, like Luke Kuechly. You know, you watch a Carolina game. I watch Panther games just for Luke Kuechly. I love to watch him fly around sideline to sideline. He actually reminds me of Junior Seau, the way Junior Seau used to play. Very active, very athletic guy. You know, just running down the football from wherever on the field. Huge Reuben Foster guy. The other guy I like at that position, man, is Ben Boulware from Clemson. And I think, did you and I disagree on Ben Boulware around national championship time? I was excited about him and you thought he was a douche? You there, dude?
You there? Yeah. I said, I don't recall having an argument about him.
Interesting. Yeah, maybe that was with somebody else. I'm a huge Ben Boulware guy. And the thing about a guy like that is I don't know athletically if he will have the chops to hang at the next level. You know, he's kind of a sawed off, you know, 5'11", 6 foot, you know, bowling ball type of guy, effort guy, try hard guy. But I just love the activity. I love that he was always around the football. He seemed to have a nose for contact. He seemed, suited to take on lead blockers and, you know, he seems like the kind of guy to me that will make big contributions in special teams. So whether or not there's a spot for him on the field, I think he becomes, you know, one of those Larry Izzo type special teams players that could hang around in the league for a long time because of that.
I feel like inside linebackers are sort of they're a great value for teams because. Because outside of like the Reuben Foster, that supreme athlete, they just get pushed way down the draft because it's such a passing league now.
Yep.
But there's a lot of value in a guy who's smart, who has learned a defense. He captained his defense. Those guys love contact. That's why they play middle linebacker. And I think those guys always end up contributing somewhere. Yeah. They might be special team star. They might move to a different position. They might just add depth, but they're really solid. I think Zach Cunningham from Vanderbilt is an interesting one too, because anybody who can play inside linebacker in the SEC for multiple years, like there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Let's talk pass rushers, Pipe. So we kind of covered the traditional inside linebacker a little bit. Do you have a favorite pass rusher?
This is an insanely good group of pass rushers.
It really is.
You know, it's really deep. I think one who will be, he might not be as flashy as the others, but, because he's not an explosive speed guy, is Derek Barnett from Tennessee.
Interesting.
Cause he was a 3-year starter for them. He broke Reggie White's school sack record, which is not an insignificant thing. Now, granted, teams are dropping back 55 times a game, so he had more chances. But he's also just a really solid player. So he can play the run. He can be a three-down defender instead of being a situational pass rusher. He's not going to be taken advantage of if teams want to run at him. And I think he's probably going to be one of those guys who's second half of the first round, but immediately comes in and makes a defense remarkably better without being the flashy guy.
That's right. Yeah, he can be a rotation guy. In a pass rush scenario, he could be the second guy. You know what I mean? He could be the Shane Ray to somebody else's Von Miller. In terms of a team already having a pass rusher.
Yeah, I think he would be. He's the guy who's going to be like a. He's never going to have more than like 11 sacks, but I bet he'll get right. 8 every year.
Dude, he would be a great fit in a place like Detroit. You know, Detroit already has Ziggy Ansah, who's done some work, who's put up some numbers, but they need another guy. They need a guy to take the chips and to take the double teams occasionally away from Ziggy Ansah, and I think he would be a nice fit there. The guy that I like, man, is a Michigan defensive end named Taco Charlton. What's that?
I said it's the name of the draft. That's by far the best name.
There's always one, you know, there's always one. Taco Charlton is a player, though. A lot of length, a lot of size, flashed a ton in Michigan games. You know, he didn't always get home in terms of the sacks and in terms of the sack numbers. But, you know, my recollection of Taco Charlton watching a lot of Michigan football was just tackles for loss. You know, he was always stringing plays out. He was always in the backfield. Yep. Making something happen on that defense. And, you know, he's a guy that will probably go late first, early second, and be a nice value there as well. Well, let's move into the secondary pipe. This is a great secondary draft.
Is it ever?
Yeah, let's very deep, very, very deep. The deepest secondary draft I can remember in a long time. So let's talk safeties first. Who do you like? Who do you like back there?
So there's a handful of safeties at the top who have kind of gotten all the buzz. But the guy who, you know, I don't watch the combine, but I just sort of pay attention to the numbers. There's a guy named Obi Melifonwu from Connecticut, who is a 3-year starter. So he started 30 plus games for him, which is always a plus. Cause I feel like, especially in the secondary, inexperienced players just get roasted. It's a tough position to transition into. Young corners especially get roasted, but safeties too. So he's experienced. He's 6'4 and like 220 pounds.
Crazy.
He ran a 4.4 flat and then just destroyed the broad jumps and the short shuttles. So he's just an insane athlete. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he played at Connecticut, which is not great competition, but not terrible.
Right.
But I also suspect he didn't get great coaching.
Yeah.
And so I'm intrigued by this guy who's one of the top athletes in the draft, is a monster size wise, and is probably a round two guy because there's so many good D-backs ahead of him. I think, I think he's a guy who could potentially really develop into just a star.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. He kind of fits that Seattle profile, you know, the long, lanky corners, the Richard Sherman profile, the Cam Chancellor kind of profile.
And I think he's a little bit more center fielder than he is like come up and thump somebody. But in the league today, that's a really valuable player.
It really is, man. Like, I want a guy who turns the ball over, you know?
Yeah.
I think, you know, you look at guys who can stop drives, and they stop drives in a variety of ways, but the best way to stop a drive and flip the field is to get a turnover. And for that reason, my guy is Malik Hooker from Ohio State. And I have mixed feelings about Malik Hooker because I also like safeties that will strike you. I like guys that will smack you in the mouth and be a factor in the run game. Yeah. He's not really that guy. Jamal Adams
is easier to find, too. Yeah, the hitters are easier to find because you can take an athletically limited guy and put him in that role. Like Cam Chancellor, who's probably the best hitting safety in the league right now, he's not a good cover guy. He's okay.
That's right.
He's okay on tight ends, but they put him in a position where they're like, no, you just have to cover this amount of space and then just scare the bejesus out of people.
He reminds me of Dave Duerson from the old Bears, man, who was really like another linebacker. You know, they would put Duerson up on the line of scrimmage, and sometimes they blitz him. Sometimes he's just hanging around as a factor in the run game. But either way, he was like having an extra backer on the field for sure. Pipe, I want to give some love to a small school guy. Do you have maybe a favorite sleeper or small school guy that you've looked at?
You know, I haven't dived as deep into this to look at that. I'm always intrigued by guys who come out of Troy, though, because I feel like they always put guys into the league who are monsters. They put in DeMarcus Ware, and then a couple years later, there was another pass rusher. So if there's any guys from Troy, that's my guy.
Dude, there you go, man. Going for the Troy player. I'm going to give love to a guy from Lane College, which is where I coach. We're a Division II historically black college here in Jackson, Tennessee. We had a guy, Whitney Richardson.
To be clear, you're not historically black.
I'm not, historically or otherwise. You know, to be completely clear, since this is radio and not television, you know, people may not know, but I am not. Although they let me coach anyway, which is really cool of them. And I have to tell you, if you've never been to a black college football game, Pipe, you got to come down this fall and take in a Lane game. Yeah, the music, you will never hear better marching band music anywhere in the world. It's an experience, man. It's so much fun. But we had a guy at Lane.
Yeah, what was the player?
Yeah, the player's defensive end, Whitney Richardson. He had 20 sacks in 10 games. Whitney, we had for 1 year. He was a transfer from, I think, Mesa Community College in Arizona. Long dude. Reminds me of Jason Taylor. He was like 6'6", 240. Really lanky, really good first step. Like nobody in our conference could lay a glove on this kid. And he actually won the National Division II Defensive Player of the Year award at Lane, and then came out. So I've kind of lost track a little bit of Whitney since he left campus, but I'm excited to see if he lands anywhere. And I think someone will take a flyer on him, because you can't beat production like that, even if it is the small college level.
Yeah, I mean when I was just graduating from Wheaton, there was a guy who was 2 or 3 years behind me named Andy Studebaker, who set the school
nice
record for sacks. Yeah, and he ended up being drafted in, and he had an 8 or 10 year career, backup outside linebacker, special teams guy. But those small school guys who have massive production and have those, you know, their athletic measurements stack up, like they can come in and play, especially if they have the kind of the work ethic in that, just they understand what they are. They're not going to come in and be a star, because the first and second and third round picks get all the reps.
Yeah.
But those late round guys, they can work their way into a rotation. They can catch an eye, and all it takes is, you know, one chance, and all of a sudden they can lock down a starting position.
That's right. Well, Pipe, let's do a little exercise that we have probably seen done on TV and in other draft podcasts. I want to mock draft the first 10 picks of this draft. Mm-hmm. And if you're up for it, I'm up for it. I will let you have the number one overall pick, so you can start as the Cleveland Browns. And then I will be on deck as the San Francisco 49ers. And I'm going to put you on the clock, man. So you are officially on the clock to open up this mock draft. We'll do the first 10 picks. Who do you like for Cleveland?
My hope is that Cleveland does the smart thing and sits out the quarterbacks this year, at least in the first half of the first round. If they want to pick up a guy later as a flyer, sure, go ahead. But, I mean, they drafted a guy in the third round last year who actually put up decent numbers. So they don't need a quarterback, especially because they're not going to be good this year. Right. They need to draft Myles Garrett, the defensive end from Texas A&M, because I think he's the safest bet in this draft. If he does not reach his potential, he'll still be a top half of the league defensive player. If he does reach his potential, he could be, you know, Julius Peppers or something. Just a beast of a pass rusher. So he's the real obvious pick.
He's a freaky talent, man. And to me, there are only four or five really special guys in this draft from a freakish physical standpoint. And I'm going to take one of them at number two. This is going to be a little bit of a surprise for this team, because they have so many needs defensively. But new GM, new regime in San Francisco. I'm taking Leonard Fournette, running back, to the San Francisco 49ers, because he's just, again, one of a handful of really freaky guys in this draft that I think immediately makes your team better. I think he's helped by the rookie year that Ezekiel Elliott had down in Dallas. And I think he goes to San Francisco and kind of gives them a new identity that they desperately need on both sides of the ball.
So let me ask a clarifying question. This is what you would do, not what you think they will do.
This is what I would do. If I were picking for these teams, this is what I would do.
Because there's no way that Fournette's going to them, because they have a Shanahan as coach, and they sold their soul to the devil in exchange for never drafting a running back before the fourth round or something. I don't know how that works, but they don't ever take running backs.
I know they don't. But think about this, though. Think about the classic Shanahan zone scheme and the kind of backs that have excelled in that scheme. Fournette would be a freakish example of that kind of back. Like he's a bigger Terrell Davis, and I'm intrigued by that aspect of him.
He's Fournette is a beast. He's going to be, I mean, again, if he's bad, he's still going to put up multiple thousand yard seasons and be, you know, be a Pro Bowl level player. If he's good, he's, you know, he's like a faster Marshawn Lynch.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I think you can't go wrong with Leonard Fournette at 2 to San Francisco. Now, the Bears are on the clock at 3. This is tough for you as a Viking fan picking in the division for a rival team.
Can I just pick Mitch Trubisky for him because I think he sucks?
yeah, exactly. You know what? They'll probably beat you to the punch and do the wrong thing. So as a lifelong Bear fan, I can tell you that chances are good that they'll screw this up.
See, here's the thing. The last few drafts, they've picked players who were talented and just couldn't stay healthy. And right. So they're hosed, but the advantage for the Bears is that they literally talent at every position because they're not good anywhere.
Yeah.
Man, let's see. John Fox is the coach.
Yep.
Still. Which means that I think that in this scenario, I think they'll go defense. Mm-hmm. And I think Fox is a trenches guy. He wants to solidify that. So every mock draft I've seen for them has them taking a defensive back because they're so bad at covering anybody.
Sure.
But a pass rush improves everything. And so I think in this scenario, they would take Solomon Thomas from Stanford. I think the other option would be Jonathan Allen from Alabama. But just one of the next couple pass rushers. So I'll give them Solomon Thomas.
Yeah.
Because I think that's more of a John Fox pick. I think that's a better way to build a defense than having a mediocre defensive line. They were okay last year, but a mediocre defensive line and then a mediocre secondary. I'd rather have a really good defensive line and try to patch together the secondary.
Indeed. Indeed. I actually like Jonathan Allen better than Solomon Thomas, just for me. Solomon Thomas
is that because he's from Alabama instead of the Pac-12?
Dude, he's from Alabama, but he's been a guy who, to me, has just been – consistent in terms of flashing and making plays. Solomon Thomas was a little bit late to the party here with, kind of a strong draft season, if you will. Not that he's a bad player, but I just don't see him being a freaky, you know, difference maker. The nice thing about Jonathan Allen, you can move him along the line of scrimmage and play him kind of anywhere. He reminds me a little bit of a Warren Sapp in that regard, and I like him for that reason. So that puts me on the clock at number 4. At Jacksonville. Jacksonville has needs. They have many needs. I'm going to take the best the best kind of versatile safety, the best leader, the best defensive leader in the draft class, and that's Jamal Adams. I think you pair him with some of the other talent that they have on that side of the ball in Jacksonville, and it becomes a very intriguing defense with a very intriguing back end. I'm going Jamal Adams, which puts you, Pipe, on the clock with our hometown Tennessee Titans.
That's right. Who I don't have any vested interest in, but the better they get, the more enjoyable my Sunday afternoons are. So I think the Titans have two big needs. One is they really need playmakers on offense, but they don't need running backs. And that's where the playmakers in this draft really are.
Right.
And then they really need defensive back help because they're pretty solid at linebacker and they have a above average defensive line. So I think they need a corner more than anything. And there are some good corners here. I think the most talented corner in the draft is Lattimore from Ohio State.
Yeah.
But he's also an injury risk.
Right.
So I think what the Titans will really try to do is trade out of this pick. If I had to guess, you know, because they don't have a second round pick. So if they could move down to like 11 or something and then pick
collect
up a second
rounder.
Yeah. Absolutely. But in this scenario, I will give them Marshawn Lattimore from Ohio State because if he's healthy, he's a shutdown number one corner, and that's their biggest need outside of a playmaking wide receiver.
Interesting, man. I like it. Speaking of playmaking wide receivers, I think one of the, again, handful of really special players in this draft is Mike Williams out of Clemson. We didn't talk receivers before. I glossed over that, so I failed in my work as the host of this program. But we will get to it now because I am picking for the New York Football Jets, the JETS, Jets, who, like the Browns, need to avoid the quarterback position like the plague. They need to not be in the quarterback business in this first round. I think Mike Williams is a nice player for them. So they lost Brandon Marshall across town. He went to the New York Giants. I think Mike Williams becomes a nice weapon for the Jets. You know, the Jets have quarterback questions. They don't know who's going to play there. There's not great offensive line talent this high up in the round. So I think you're looking at a very special player in a very sensible spot there to the Jets at six with Mike Williams.
The Jets could go any direction because they probably have the least young talent of any team in the league. They still have a few okay veterans,
right?
But they're just an old crappy team.
They're an old really crappy bad. Team. They could go running back. You know, a lot of people have Fournette going there. Yeah. You know, they could reach for a Dalvin Cook or a Christian McCaffrey. I mean, they could fill a need there. They could fill a need at receiver. They just have a lot of needs on that team.
Yeah, and, very much.
You know, you kind of can't go wrong, you know, picking there. So, Pipe, that puts you on the clock with the now Los Angeles Chargers at number seven.
Oh, that sounds so bad. They're the San Diego Chargers.
I really hate it. I do.
Yeah. And I feel terrible for San Diego fans because I can't think of anything worse than losing your team. well, Mike Williams would have been the perfect fit here, I think, because they're about one explosive offensive player or two away from being potentially a division winner, because their defense is pretty good, especially with Bosa and a handful of other guys. And then they drafted a tight end last year. I think Hunter Henry went to them last year. So, and then they've got Melvin Gordon at running back. And then Phillip Rivers is not dead yet. So I think they really need a wide receiver. It just feels a little early for the rest of the wide receivers.
It does.
But I think they take a flyer on – oh, man. This is how far do I stretch on this one? It's between – what is it? It's between Corey – what's his face?
Corey
from
Davis.
Western Michigan. Yeah.
Corey Davis.
Or the Washington wide receiver who is John – is it John Brown?
John Brown. I'm not a fan of it all.
I think they go with Corey because I think he's the other guy who has the potential to be a complete receiver. You know, can stretch the field, can make plays after the catch. He's big, he's fast. It's a small school receiver, but at the same time, the best receiver in the NFL right now also went to Western Michigan. So
Central Michigan, right?
Was it Central Michigan? Yeah, that's right. Antonio Davis went to – it was one of those directional Michigan schools, so they're all basically
It's a directional school. That's right, man. Yep.
Fire up chips. So those guys can produce. So I think it's a stretch there because I don't think he's a guarantee, but the alternative is just sort of getting deeper at a position they're already pretty good at. Like they could go with – Derek Barnett or Hassan Reddick or one of these defensive linemen who's there or a defensive back, but they really need an offensive playmaker.
Yep. That's right. So that has me picking in the eighth spot to Carolina. And I'm going to make a little bit of a reach here too. So you reached on the last pick. I'm going to reach on this pick with a player that I really like. He fills a need for Carolina with Jonathan Stewart getting a little long in the tooth. I'm going to go Christian McCaffrey right here, man. Christian McCaffrey, sneaky good inside runner. Not the powerhouse, obviously, that Leonard Fournette is, but has great vision between the tackles. He's a four-down player. You know, Christian McCaffrey helps you in the return game. Mm-hmm. He helps you in the slot. I think he does a lot of things in that offense that will make Carolina a little bit more versatile than they have been in the past. You know, they've had kind of the quarterback power look with Cam Newton. They've had the inside thumper with Jonathan Stewart. I think McCaffrey gives them a little bit more versatility in the backfield in terms of what he brings. So I'm going Christian McCaffrey to Carolina at eight, which puts you on the clock.
I think that would be a really interesting fit for them because they've only ever had sort of this offense that does two things. One is chuck it 15 to 25 yards downfield, and the other is run it between the tackles.
That's right.
And so to have a guy who can work that in between, which McCaffrey's a monster receiver. He's really good. I think that changes the shape of that offense pretty dramatically.
Absolutely. So who do you like pipe at 9 for the Cincinnati Bengals?
I don't know. Who's been arrested recently?
you know who I have going there, actually?
Reuben Foster?
I had Reuben Foster going there. I think he's
I think it fits. I think he or somebody like Barnett would both be a good fit there, because they used to have a really good defense for several years, and then they've lost some talent and just sort of diminished on defense. They're still an okay offense. They're not great, but they're okay.
Yeah.
I think the other thing they need is an offensive lineman, but this is a really bad offensive line class, and so I don't think they stretch for it. So let's give him Foster, just because I feel like he plays into the Cincinnati ethos a little bit better.
I agree, man. I totally agree. I think he fits in immediately there. He provides a little insurance against, their other insane linebacker, making himself unavailable for one reason or another.
They have a couple of insane guys on that defense.
They do. They really do. So now I'm picking here to wrap our 10-pick mock draft for Buffalo. Interesting team, Buffalo. Buffalo could go quarterback. They probably won't. They seem content to just be Tyrod Taylor's team here for the moment. They could go running back, but the two kind of elite guys are off the table. I think there's a guy left here in Malik Hooker that represents a really great value at number 10 for Buffalo. Again, this is a safety, kind of a center fielder. Rangy, makes a lot of plays, turns the ball over, can take the ball to the crib when he gets it in his hands. I really like Malik Hooker for Buffalo if he's around. Another guy that we could look at there, you could look at a Dalvin Cook, you could look at a Taco Charlton potentially on the D line. I actually think in our little mock, Jonathan Allen is still available. Am I right? Because you took Solomon Thomas.
I took Solomon Thomas for the Bears, and then you took Allen's still available.
I talked about how I like Jonathan Allen, but he hadn't come off the board yet. So I'm going Malik Hooker.
If he fell to 10, that would be a steal for Buffalo.
That would be a huge steal. Yeah, that's a difference maker. If he's there, I may need to grab him, because the draft is deeper, certainly at safety, than it is at defensive tackle or defensive end. So, Pipe, this has been fun, man. As it always is, talking football together.
I'm really annoyed I couldn't remember Corey Davis's name. I kept wanting to call him Corey Williams, which is a different athlete altogether. So, apologies to listeners for getting my wide receiver names mixed up. That was a total brain fart mid draft.
Somebody will correct you on Twitter, though. That's the great thing about it.
The last time we talked sports, I accidentally called Oscar Robertson Oscar Peterson. So, one of whom is a fantastic jazz musician, the other of whom is the former record holder for triple doubles in a season.
Hey, you know what? It's an honest mistake, Pipe. Don't beat yourself up over stuff like that.
No, I was the listeners who were beating me up. I was doing just fine.
Yeah. Well, speaking of other players and other sports entirely, we've got a couple of minutes left. We should just take 5 minutes or so here and talk about the NBA playoffs. So we're deep into round one now. We've got some nice series going on. Some nice performances have come out of this. And you, in particular, Pipe, had some things that you wanted to say about the MVP race that has yet to be decided.
Right. So the longer Russell Westbrook plays and keeps putting up triple doubles, the more I hear people going, well, clearly he's the MVP. And I realize he was your choice when we discussed this previously, correct?
Actually, Kawhi Leonard was my choice.
Kawhi Leonard is your choice. Okay, that's right. So, and the more I watch Russell Westbrook play and play quote unquote with his teammates, the more I think
we use that term loosely.
There's just no way in anything that he should be the MVP.
Right.
He has had a profoundly incredible statistical season, including this first round of the playoffs.
Right.
He makes everybody else on that team worse.
Yeah. That's
like, they're
true.
Just all because and so when people talk about, well, Harden has the better supporting cast, if Harden was on Oklahoma City, that supporting cast would be better because he involves people. And I think D'Antoni's a way better coach too. So there's all sorts of moving pieces here.
Right.
I think Westbrook is the definition of polarizing player because he's doing something nobody's ever done.
Right.
He's a force of nature. he does make his team better in one sense, but he doesn't make any of his teammates better. That's so true. Puzzle that one out. I think this first round of the playoffs, if it was included in the voting, should actually take away from his MVP case, not add to it. That's my argument. And so I still rest with Harden as the MVP. But it's just interesting because I think Westbrook has been very divisive.
Yeah, he certainly has, man. Now, who have you enjoyed watching the most just here in this first round? So as you think about the games that you've been able to catch or check out here in the first round of the playoffs, who have you enjoyed?
I think the biggest surprise so far has been the fact that the Bulls managed to take two games from Boston before Boston sort of found their footing. Because the Bulls are garbage. They're just a bad terrible. Team.
Like, oh, yeah. Hoiberg's not a
– I don't know if Hoiberg's a good coach. He's been given a garbage roster. Dwayne Wade's old as dirt. Jimmy Butler's fantastic, and he's the only good player on that team. Right. Their front office is horrendous. They traded away their Taj Gibson and McDermott, both of whom ought to be contributors.
That's right.
And yet somehow they took two games. Now, I think Boston's going to wipe the floor with them from here on out, especially because Isaiah Thomas looks like he sort of regained his playing after the loss of his sister. But that was probably been the biggest surprise to me. I think the Memphis-San Antonio series is great fun because that's just an elbow throwing good time is what that is. And then Fizdale's rant,
classic
Stafford data was you're not going to rook us. There's so many quotes from that are just the best.
The dog in Fizdale came out in that press. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah. I watched it and I was like, I want to play for that guy, a coach who gets his players backs like that. And it seemed to sort of not tip the series, but even the scales a little bit because he brought the fire out in his team a little bit more. And I think that the refs paid attention because that things have equalized a little bit in the game since. So that's been a lot of fun as well. Memphis is always they're kind of a grind to watch because they don't play pretty basketball, but that's also what makes them fun because they play different than everybody else.
Dude, they do. They really play different and they're fun to watch. And I agree. I think they needed Fizdale's, feistiness in that presser to remind them that they belonged there and that they could be on the same floor as San Antonio in that series. And it's funny, man. Memphis has some star type guys, some guys who are just on the bubble of stardom. Mike Conley, when he gets hot, man, is a blast to watch. I mean, he's a guy who can do a lot of things. And Marc Gasol is one of my favorite post players to watch. Just a technician, a very good shooter. He does interesting things. So I would love to see them.
Great passer too.
Yeah, I'd love to see them grit this one out, man, and come away with the upset. Yeah, as much as I love San Antonio, I'm conflicted in that one because I really like both teams. I like both approaches to the game, and both teams have really fun guys to watch. So I hate to see either of them go home.
Yeah, you watch a series like that and you just go, why couldn't those guys replace the Bulls and the Hawks and the Trailblazers? I mean, granted, the Blazers are actually kind of a fun team to watch too. It's just that they're playing Golden State and they don't have any chance. But it's just a bummer that there are matchups like that and then you get like Wizards Hawks and you're like, that shouldn't even – who cares?
Yeah, I would watch Wizards Hawks in like November. You know what I mean? Like that's just a – it's a boring kind of series that doesn't bring a whole lot to the table for sure.
I'm also reminded that I really don't like the Cavaliers. I just LeBron is amazing, but I don't know. I don't like Kyrie very much. He's a stupendous scorer. He's really, really good.
Right.
I don't like the way they play. I don't like the sort of on switch off switch mentality where they kind of coasted into the playoffs and now they're trying to turn it on. And Indiana, there's another team that's just like, who cares? Who cares about the Indiana
that's true.
Pacers? Just a boring team. I don't know. They're just they seem like a very self aware team. The Cavs do where it just sort of. They recognize that they're on TV. They recognize everybody's commenting on them. It feels very dramatic.
Yeah.
As opposed to just sort of like you never get that sense with the Spurs. The Spurs are just like they're here to win, period. And
dude, but they're not
State.
A likably dramatic team. Like the Lakers in the 80s were always like that too, but like for some reason they were the Showtime Lakers, you know, like you expected because it made sense.
Cavs drama is not entertainment. Showtime was entertainment. Like they're like, "Oh, the lights are on and we're going to put on a show for everybody." The Cavs is more like we're going to pout and whine and then pose and flex and it's just who cares?
Dude, I totally agree. There's no likability about them. And I think this is the Achilles heel to the LeBron James legacy, man. It has been and it will be. There's a fundamental charisma piece that he has always lacked. And he's always found himself in these unlikable situations, you know?
He's been trying to be a brand since he was 17 years old. And it's hard to blame him given the era that we're in. But you can't strive to be a brand and be likable.
That's right.
You have to strive to be great and then the brand happens.
That's right, man. The brand needs to happen by accident. Or the brand needs to just be a normal kind of outflow of greatness, which actually harkens back to the branding discussion that we had in the ep that dropped today, man. You know, if you haven't really done anything, yet you're obsessed with branding and platform, you become a manifestly obnoxious person. And LeBron, to be fair to him, has done a ton, but you're right. He's always been about the brand and he's always been, I think, trying to grasp at something that just has never sort of flown out of him naturally. And it's tragic is too strong a word, but it's an interesting kind of sad, sub story to the LeBron James narrative.
It's what happens when somebody becomes excellent at an entertainment craft in the era of social media superstars and everybody's constantly on screen. And so Jordan was spectacular for several years before he became a brand. And then even then there was sort of a myth behind the brand because it was just a different era. LeBron had high school games broadcast on ESPN. And that was still sort of an archaic era compared to where we are now. So again, it's hard to, I just feel like it takes away from his greatness on the court that he is also striving to be a brand.
That's true. That's true.
It takes away from my enjoyment of his greatness on the court. I don't think it affects his play at all.
Yeah, I don't think it affects his play, but it affects my perception of his play, or my enjoyment of his play. And what's interesting is that Kobe lacked that too. Kobe was always trying to be Jordan. He was trying to be a brand in the same way. But I think later in his career, he embraced his villainness in a way that LeBron just kind of can't or won't. Kobe, I just feel like at some point the sort of self-perception changed from I'm trying to be Jordan to I'm just trying to be a villain who shoots all the time and I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Did
not care what anybody thought.
That kind of low grade insanity has bled over even into his retirement with the Kobe Bryant Muse Cage and those sorts of projects where you just go, this guy's really owning the mantle of just kind of being a crazy person.
Yeah.
Well, Pipe,
I wish LeBron would get to that point and just be like, I'm just going to destroy the league. And be the villain, because I think people would love him more if he cared less what people thought.
That's right. Yeah, fascinating, man. Fascinating. Pipe, we have wandered to and fro, man. We've been on for over an hour talking NFL draft and NBA playoffs, and I enjoy these sports apps. The thing that's great about these sports apps is that people who complain when we talk sports don't have to listen to them.
That's right. We will brand this right up front. We'll call this a bonus episode and then just label it NFL draft and NBA playoffs. And they can just go, you know what? I'm just not going to hit play on that.
I'm out. I'm going to steer clear. But you know who I know will be listening is Hector Lagares of Lagares Roasters. Hector is a loyal fan. Hector is a sports fan in addition to being an elite craft coffee roaster. So Hector is a multi-tool player. And he will roast your coffee. He will listen to sports talk. Go to happyrantpodcast.com, grab yourself a bag of Lagares Roasters coffee, and check out the Kickstarter for the movie Silverdome, which I wrote and co-produced. We would love to have some of the Happy Rant family involved in the funding of post-production for Silverdome. So check out the Kickstarter, grab yourself some coffee and Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. Resonate has helped us with our editing and mastering pretty much from the beginning of the podcast. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Mark and Jake do a fantastic and timely job with all sorts of podcast services. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast.
There's no better way to start your day than spending time in God's Word and in prayer. Don't know where to start? We have a free daily prayer podcast created to help you do just that. The Your Daily Prayer podcast delivers a thoughtful devotional and timely prayer to you 7 days a week. Gain inspiration, faith, and encouragement with daily messages in 10 minutes or less. To start listening now, search Your Daily Prayer on your favorite podcast app or visit lifeaudio.com.